I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Judge Eileen Cannon, who was appointed by former President Trump to the Federal District Court in Southern Florida, has put the brakes on the Justice Department's criminal investigation into classified documents found at Trump's residence, Mar-a-Lago, this summer. On Monday, she called for a special master to review the evidence, including material protected by attorney-client and executive privilege. Her decision has raised a whole host of questions and concerns from lawyers across the country, including from former Attorney General Bill Barr. He said on Fox yesterday that Cannon's opinion was wrong and the government should appeal.
I don't think the appointment of a special master is going to hold up, but even if it does, I don't see it fundamentally changing the trajectory. In other words, I don't think it changes the ball game so much as maybe we'll have a rain delay for a couple of innings. But I think that the fundamental dynamics of the case are set, which is the government has very strong evidence of what it really needs to determine whether charges are appropriate, which is government documents were taken, classified information was taken and not handled appropriately. And they are looking into, and there's some evidence to suggest, that they were deceived.
We asked Charlie Savage to join us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning national security and legal reporter at The New York Times. Charlie Savage, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. We have a lot to discuss. There is a lot going on. It seems to change almost every hour. Let's begin with Judge Cannon. What was her reasoning behind this idea, appointing a federal master, to look into this investigation?
I think there were a couple pieces that went into it. One is that the FBI has a procedure when it does a search for having a separate filter team pull out anything that might be protected by attorney-client privilege so investigators ought not see it and keep it from the people who are actually working on the case, which is what they did here. And she said, number one, that's not good enough. They also need to look for material that investigators ought not see because it's covered by executive privilege, which is a very controversial contention on her part. Among legal scholars. And secondly, she said, because Trump has the status of being a former president, in the interests of fairness or the appearance of fairness here under that sort of heightened situation, it really makes more sense or is appropriate to have an independent person, not someone who's part of the FBI, even if not involved in the case, looking at these documents and sorting them into what's fair game and what's off limits.
She talked about Trump's potential reputational harm. Is that what you're referring to?
She talked about the heightened potential reputational harm of being a former president subjected to this search, let alone potentially charged based on materials gathered in it. So in one element of this that has come under scrutiny is that she seems to think that he has special privileges as a former president that ordinary people who are subject to searches do not receive. And that has come under question in terms of whether everyone should be treated equally by the law. But that is what her reasoning was.
And just to underscore that any time someone is investigated, there is the potential for reputational harm, correct? Because someone, the government or the police are investigating you.
That's right. So any time anybody is the subject of a search warrant, they may have equal reason to fear reputational harm and certainly would love to have the investigation shut down while a special master is brought in, but they are not entitled to that most of the time just because they have that fear. And so her reasoning that Trump as former president is entitled to that because he's a former president is one of the elements of her ruling that has attracted a lot of critical attention.
How did Judge Cannon get this particular case?
It was randomly assigned to her after Trump's lawyers filed it within the Southern District of New York and in the sort of northern part of that area where Mar-a-Lago is. And so another element of this that's interesting is there was already a judge who was overseeing this matter, a magistrate judge who had initially seen the government's evidence and decided that amounted to probable cause that justified a search warrant. and they could have gone to that judge and asked for a special master. Instead, they waited a couple weeks and then sought a different judge. And so it ends up with this basically brand new judge that Trump had appointed in November of 2020, confirmed after he had lost re-election.
Are there red flags raised because of that? Is this judge
it's
shopping?
It's not the case that judges... Well, that would be the accusation. He had a judge, he didn't want it, and he rolled the dice again to try to get one who would be more favorably inclined to him and succeeded. That said, judges are not required to recuse themselves if they're hearing a case that involves the president who appointed them or the former president. And so it is what it is.
Now, both the Trump and then the DOJ team have until Friday, what, to come up with a list of names for this special master?
She has given, she's laid out that she wants a special master. She intends to appoint one to go through these materials and make some decisions about what should be off limits or some recommendations. Ultimately, it'll be her decision as the actual judge here. And yes, that order doesn't have a lot of meat on the bones yet. And so there's two things that she's asking both Trump's legal team and the Justice Department to work together on and see what they can agree and then flag for her what they can't agree. And one is potential people who could be appointed to this role. That's going to have to be someone who has a high-level security clearance. Yeah. And even though Trump says publicly that he declassified everything, his lawyers in court do not repeat that claim and have expressly said they agree whoever looks at this stuff needs to have a security clearance. And secondly, what exactly the parameters are going to be for this person's role. And there's a lot of play in the joints left. We don't know, for example, if the special master decides that this document or that document is clearly not covered by any privilege, can the investigation start up again, at least with regard to that document? Or does this whole thing have to stay on ice until the person has gone through all 11,000 plus documents and adjudicated any disputes between the two sides over any of them, which could be a much longer delay? Another question is that since the government had access to this stuff for almost a month before she issued this order, very unusual for a special master not to have been asked for immediately, and then so the government never looks at it. It's the FBI has already gone through it, except for the materials that its own filter teams decided were attorney-client privilege. So it probably has a log at this point describing each document. So a less intrusive option would be for her to instruct the special master to start with that log, and then the special master could ask the Trump legal team whether they want to flag specific documents on it that the special master should look at as potentially privileged. Or is the special master going to start from scratch and turn over every single page of every piece of paper? And it's not just 11,000 pages. It's 11,000 documents. And so there could be many, many, many more multiples of thousands, tens of thousands of pages here to go through.
I mean,
another question unresolved for Friday.
Sure. And the result would be either a short delay or a long delay or something in between.
That's right. There's no doubt here that this is, I mean, it's already delayed the investigation at this point, right? She's basically shut them down as of her order on Monday. And now the question is, how long is this going to be delayed? And to what extent will disputes then arise that require appeals or lead to appeals that lead to even longer delays? One of the big issues also here yet to be resolved is whether the Justice Department is going to appeal any of this ruling or the whole thing or none of it. They clearly don't think it's right on the law. A large amount of legal scholars around the country, including Bill Barr, agree with them. But they may find it strategically in their interest to just let it happen anyway, let this special master get going and get through it so they can move on, rather than opening the door to indefinite delay as one thing gets argued and slowly briefs written and then a ruling and then an appeal to the next level and so forth, running out the clock, which has been Trump's legal playbook dating back to his time as president when Congress tried to start doing oversight of him.
And when you talk about the clock, I mean, could this be something that could drag on for years?
I don't want to get into the speculation game at that level of how long, but the wheels of justice can move slowly, and Trump has shown himself to be a master at delay through litigation.
You mentioned something like 11,000 documents. And what we have learned from your reporting and other people's reporting is that, there's various kinds of classified documents in there. There are personal effects in there, sort of revealing the sort of haphazard nature of how this material was either boxed up and sent down to Mar-a-Lago or how it was stored there at Mar-a-Lago. Can you add to that?
Certainly. And I don't want to take credit for the reporting here. This is coming from government documents that were filed in court. So this is not, you know, leaks based on sources. Right. But yes, there's one of the interesting things about what has come out as a result of the Trump objections is more and more information about what the government found there in ways that are not necessarily helpful to Trump in the optics land. It's clear that he was allowing this material to be kept in a haphazard, sloppy fashion, government documents owned by the government, some marked as classified, some not, some marked as extremely classified, mixed in with articles of clothing, gifts, books, personal documents that were not part of the materials that the government owns and should have been at the National Archives. In sort of a jumble, newspaper clippings and so forth. And so part of what happened here was that the search warrant approved by the judge permitted the government to take anything it found in a container that also contained a responsive document, a government document marked as classified, and as evidence of how it was these sensitive documents were being stored. Not just that they were not being stored in accordance with security procedures for classified information, but also they were just sort of being tossed around. And so that has, though, given Trump's people an edge once they found a judge that was friendly to their argument, that he had some personal property in there. Even though the FBI had a right to take it, that gives him some property interest in having someone go through this stuff, because otherwise he doesn't own any of the government stuff that he was holding on to, even though he had no right to. And both the National Archives and eventually the Justice Department, armed with a subpoena, had repeatedly sought to get him to return.
We're almost having a break here, Charlie, but just a quick follow-up then. But the things that are personal effects to Trump, you know, let's say a scarf, to toss it out there, that would get returned to him?
At the end of the process, yes, but not now, because it remains evidence about how he was keeping these documents. And there's some reports that the public hasn't seen. They're still sealed in the docket, but that the judge referenced in her ruling on Monday that say that there's also some documents that contain medical information and some financial information related to taxes that were also swept up, that the FBI cataloged as what it took. So we don't know what that is, but it's not just things like scarves, but also some personal documents, apparently.
A very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Charlie Savage. He's a national security and legal reporter at the New York Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with our guest about the fight over government documents found at Mar-a-Lago, with a judge ordering the appointment of a special master. Many of these documents were labeled confidential or secret, top secret, and classified. There were also personal effects that were found when the FBI went in with their investigation. Again, Charlie Savage, getting our conversation started. He's Pulitzer Prize-winning national security and legal reporter at the New York Times. Just a couple of more questions for you, Charlie, then I know you do have to go. The judge did allow an intelligence investigation to continue, but essentially halted the criminal investigation, or at least put it on hold. How does the DOJ proceed when one part of the investigation gets the green light and the other part gets the red light?
That's very tricky. I wouldn't say it's an investigation that she allowed to proceed, which is important for a reason I'll explain. There's two other things going on here, which are both reviews as opposed to investigations. And the review, one is that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is conducting a risk review of what would be damaged to national security if any of these documents were compromised when they were sitting down there in an insecure way at Mar-a-Lago, if someone got in and and read them, some foreign government spy. And what would they need to shut down? What would they need to move or change? And the other is that with the ODNI, the Justice Department is working on a classification review, which should not just of the documents marked as classified, but presumably all of them. Maybe some stuff is in there that was missing a marking, but is still classified. And that should tell us some information about whether they think there's anything to Trump's outside of court, but not inside of court claim that he had somehow declassified anything he randomly took off his desk and left the Oval Office with throughout his presidency. She allowed both of those things to continue while banning the government from using the material for now for investigative purposes, which means going out and trying to find out new things, new facts from the world. So yes, one of the many critiques of her opinion is that even though it's good from a policy perspective that she was cautious and didn't disrupt those other two things which have national security implications, it doesn't make much sense from a legal coherence perspective that the government, the executive branch, can use these documents for one purpose but not the other. Either they're privileged and they're off limits or they're not to the executive branch. And so that's, put that as maybe not the most important thing about her ruling that people have criticized, but it's one of them.
Well, you wrote a whole article quoting a number of lawyers who have criticized her decision. We played former Attorney General Bill Barr also criticizing her decision. Assuming Trump and his team are in support of her decision, as you talk to people across the country, people being lawyers, were there people that felt like she was on firm legal ground?
I did not find any serious lawyer with expertise in this area
really?
Who thought this was the correctly decided opinion across a broad spectrum of people, including, although I didn't talk to him myself, as we see on TV, Bill Barr.
That tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he, of course, used his time in office to defend Trump mightily. But the two of them, it is worth noting that the two of them had a falling out at the end when he was unwilling to back Trump's false claims about the election being stolen, and he had some pretty harsh things to say about Trump in his memoir. So it's not like the two of them are allies at this point. Nevertheless, he's no liberal.
No, he is not. Well, Charlie Savage, we got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And he is a Pulitzer Prize winning national security and legal reporter for the New York Times. Well, the fight between the DOJ and former President Trump and his lawyers over classified documents seized by the FBI at Mar-a-Lago took a dramatic turn on Monday. Just to recap, Judge Eileen Cannon called for a special master to review the documents for potential attorney-client and executive privilege. This is, we are learning, uncharted legal territory. The two sides have until Friday for their list of candidates. Now, the Washington Post reported this morning that FBI agents found a document that described, quote, a foreign government's military defense, including its nuclear capabilities, unquote, raising concerns in the intelligence community. This investigation has been going on for months, with Trump's team allegedly hiding, moving, and in some cases not being truthful about the material that had been stored haphazardly at Trump's residence that is also a club. Former Attorney General Barr is speaking out on this and spoke on Fox on Friday, raising a host of concerns.
I think the driver on this from the beginning was loads of classified information sitting in Mar-a-Lago. People say this was unprecedented. Well, it's also unprecedented for a president to take all this classified information and put them in a country club. Okay, and how long is the government going to try to get that back? You know, they jawbone for a year. They were deceived on the voluntary actions taken. They then went and got a subpoena. They were deceived on that, they feel. And the facts are starting to show that they were being jerked around. And so how long do they wait?
Well, I will put that question to our guest who's sitting across from me here in our Philadelphia studio. That's Craig Green. He's a professor of law at Temple University, also a former Justice Department lawyer who worked in the George W. Bush administration. He also clerked for Merrick Garland. And Craig Green, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks very much. I love the show.
Thank you so much. And let's pick up where Bill Barr left off. They being jerked around?
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing like how an ordinary criminal prosecution would happen. You get a subpoena, you follow the subpoena. They do a search warrant. If somebody did a search warrant in my apartment, I wouldn't get the chance to have a special master investigate all the stuff they took. And this is extremely special treatment for former President Trump in the face of what appear to be consistent and multi-level resistance and misstatements. And so I think absolutely the Justice Department and the Attorney General felt in order to get these documents back, dramatic action was necessary. And they got authorization from a magistrate judge exactly as they're supposed to do. And they went and they grabbed a lot of documents, which is what happens because you don't want the FBI agents who are rummaging around to decide which documents to take or not. You often get a very broad authorization to gather all documents that might be responsive to the possible crimes that are being investigated. And that's exactly what the DOJ and FBI did.
You reminded me, we were talking before going on the air, that back in January, Merrick Garland said, we will follow the law. He must have known in January than what we did not know until, you know, several months later.
Yeah, I think that's another thing to bear in mind is this is nothing how things go. Criminal investigations are not litigated in the press. And so everything that anyone thinks about this investigation, you need to bear in mind that the Attorney General, DOJ, know a lot more about what the documents are and this sort of a thing. And I think that he was very clear in some of his public statements, that one, including the one you mentioned, and I think some other themes, that no one is above the law. And so if anyone mishandles national security and presidential record documents, there's going to be an investigation, there's going to be a subpoena, and if there's not a response to the subpoena, there's going to be a search warrant. And search warrants and subpoenas are not fun for anyone, and they aren't fun for former President Trump. The difference is that this judge has layered one procedural obstacle on another and has actually now at this point almost ground to a halt a criminal investigation we shouldn't even be knowing about. It should be happening entirely behind closed doors.
Well, that's interesting because it was Trump who said that he had been, quote unquote, raided by the FBI. The FBI, as I understand it and read it, was trying to be rather quiet about the whole thing.
Absolutely. In standard course, he's playing both sides of it. He's both making a public image of it and then playing the victim, claiming he's being a public image of it. So his reputation is damaged by a storm that he himself has started to create, not the Attorney General, not the Department of Justice, not the FBI. And so I think this is, again, a chaos strategy, scraping together a number of different arguments from different places, putting it all in the gumbo and hoping for the best.
Now, my understanding, again, and we're all, you know, I'm no expert in classified documents, but nonetheless, that none of these documents, whether they were classified or top secret or whatever the designation was, they do not belong to the former president. Is that correct?
A couple of things. The secret and top secret, of course, they have the most secret documents, some of the most secret documents labeled are in these materials. But even general presidential records, as late as 1977 and President Nixon, there was an establishment of a fight, a Supreme Court case about whether the president just is entitled to all his stuff. And Nixon thought yes, and the Supreme Court, 7-2, said no. And so I think there was a statute that governs not just classified information, not just national security information, but general records concerning the presidency. The archives are entitled to those things. And if there is any objection about executive privilege, there is a statutory and a bureaucratic process for resolving those, since any claim of presidential privilege, it is two presidential claims, Biden and Trump, the current president and the former president. That's all handled in statute, but it's not handled in criminal court, in a district court like Judge Cannon. Mm-hmm. I think that's a terrible mistake on her part.
But here we are, a year and a half after the start of this investigation, the original return of some of the documents, here we are fighting about documents.
Yeah, and the 1977 opinion said the claim, any claim of a former president, erodes over time. This is now almost 2 years later. The former president's interests are dropping and dropping. The need to restore those documents to the public, their public documents, to restore them to public archives. Put aside the questions of classification, put aside the question of national security. Just every part of this handling of the executive privilege argument is upside down and backward.
We are learning again that there were personal effects. Apparently, there was some tax correspondence, I think some medical correspondence as well. How should that be handled? Apparently, all sort of haphazardly filed in with these classified documents or even empty folders that said classified documents.
And that would happen for anyone who gets their house raided. If someone raided my apartment today and took all my files, they'd get and took my computer. They would take lots of files that weren't responsive, but the FBI agents are going to sit there in my living room sorting out which ones are or aren't. They grab it all, they sort it out. If there is any attorney-client privilege, mentioning that, that'll be suppressed later if I ever get indicted. But the idea of having all this rigmarole, these process along the way, is incredibly unprecedented. And of course, the judge mentioned, well, you never had a former president get investigated this way, right? But of course, even Bill Barr says this is potentially unprecedented misconduct by a former president. We could never believe. Mm-hmm. And I think the judge's opinion really shows a bad tone because she's so emphasized on the risks to Trump and not any to the risk to the investigation or criminal activity by him and other people. I think it's just entirely one-sided. It's really a regrettable piece of work.
People talk about, you know, once you're no longer president, you are an ordinary citizen. But I think we're learning that you're not. I mean, I guess because there is the potential of some kind of precedent.
Yeah. Well, I'd say, again, I think there are a lot of different categories of material. But let's think about the national security stuff for a minute. There is no defense for Donald Trump's retaining any national security information at all. He has no national security role. Those are public documents. They are not stored in a safe or in a pool house or any other place at Mar-a-Lago. So putting that aside, there are also presidential records. And that's exactly the kind of stuff Nixon fought about in the 70s. He said, I want to keep it. And Congress said, if you want to make those arguments, you make them in a bureaucratic agency procedure with the archivist and the current president, and they figure out which documents you get to keep privately and which ones you don't. This is not to be hammered out in some judicial proceeding with a district court who has not served for 2 full years. This is the most important case Judge Cannon will probably ever have in her career, mm-hmm. and she's having it in the first 2 years of her job. Unfortunate. But I think that the handling of that issue is all to be handled by people much above her pay grade. The archivist, the statute passed by Congress, the Presidential Records Act, to be handled in conjunction with the possibility of the current president, Joe Biden, having something to say about executive privilege. So I think this is the thing, is there are all kinds of documents that might be there, but none of them warrant this kind of halting the investigation, this kind of special master, this kind of vesting of power in a district court way down in Florida.
Does the government have any recourse besides appealing this decision, this ruling?
I think the best strategy, I thought about this morning, the best strategy is probably to appeal it, but to make sure not to stop the district court proceedings. So if you appeal it, ordinarily you stop everything and go to the appeal. That's months later. That's the opposite of the DOJ's argument. We need to go ahead forward now. So go forward with the special master. Go ahead and comply with that process. I would hope that the district judge would allow them 48 hours, the Trump team, I mean to say, to list the documents they object to. That's a standard procedure. 48 hours to object to it. Maybe, you know, who knows, maybe it's a dozen documents. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's but it's not on the DOJ's job to sort of figure it out. And it certainly is not the job of the special master to consult all 11,000 documents. That would be absurd. So my view would be, at least again, assuming rational behavior, one would like to think that the district judge would really put a narrow scope on this. The DOJ can appeal the case to preserve the principle that all this is wrong, but nevertheless continue to move forward with an urgent investigation, which is their argument. We have an urgent investigation, the details which none of us know.
Right.
And I think that would be the best, most consistent way to go forward. Appeal it, don't stop the district court proceedings, and handle it on both tracks at once.
Let me read a couple of comments here. And one, I did a little homework for just to make sure we could answer this listener comment. We're talking about these paper documents found, but nothing was done about Hillary Clinton's destruction of the hard drive that also contained classified information and was in her personal possession. Now, she shouldn't have done what she did. I think we can say that. But, Craig, how do you compare and contrast these two cases?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. President Trump, the most important thing is President Trump took documents away from the presidency that any reasonable person would have known he shouldn't. He was subpoenaed to return those documents. He didn't respond. There is now a search warrant. They've recovered the documents. The question with the Clinton case was whether to indict. The indictment question, we're not even acres or miles from an indictment question. The question here is whether the investigation of former President Trump should go forward. The investigation of Hillary Clinton went forward just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
in fact, there were several.
For sure there were. And so that's what I mean is I think that's a complete, I mean, I understand the politics, like that's the politics comparison, but the legal comparison is 100% inept.
This was something I asked Charlie Savage, but you've got these two reviews or investigations. I hope I'm using the correct words here. Can the intelligence review go forward and the criminal review or investigation be put on hold? Is that possible for the DOJ to do?
Theoretically, almost anything's possible because you just sort of establish a wall between the people who are supposed to know one set of things and the people who aren't supposed to know that set of things. So they have these two teams going on right now, the privilege team and the investigative team. They're not supposed to talk to each other. in the district. You know, so
under what they're currently doing,
exactly. And so you could have a very likely would have a national security team that could coordinate with the national security review. You could have another set of people who are doing the classification review. All those people would need to be insulated from the investigative team and especially the investigative team, because those are the people who will make the tactical choices on how to investigate this criminal investigation. And the idea is, if some of the documents are in the wrong box, those people need to be insulated so they can go ahead and move forward without being poisoned by allegedly having, I mean, some random document attorney-client privilege. I mean, how many of those documents are likely to be attorney-client privilege? I think there's very low likelihood. Mm-hmm. And then how many of them are presidential records? That's a deep constitutional question. Congress has a procedure for handling that. And the Trump argument is basically saying, you can't stop me as a former president. I can do whatever I want with those documents. I think that's an extremely troublesome and disruptive point of view.
Let me read a couple of more comments, and we're going to take a short break and then get back to our conversation. Jim says, it's extremely concerning that this judge, Judge Cannon, was appointed by Trump and then granted this request. She does not belong in this case in any way based on her action. She shouldn't even be on, well, I don't know about that. She shouldn't even be on the bench. But nonetheless, I'll toss that to you, Craig. Are there some questions about conflict of interest for her?
No, I don't think conflict of interest. I think in a way it's bigger disappointment that she spent 5 years on major crimes as an assistant U.S. attorney. And so I think she should understand better than anybody how a subpoena process and search warrants work. She kind of got blinded by the lights of this former President Trump and threw out, I think, much of the experience that she would have known better in any other case.
And that is Craig Green, our guest in this hour of Radio Times. We are talking about a whole host of news related to the fight over government documents that were found at Mar-a-Lago this summer. It was Monday, a judge ordered the appointment of a special master. Many of these documents are labeled confidential or secret, top secret, classified. We're talking about what the FBI discovered, the rule of law, why this matters, and where the case goes next. Talking with Craig Green, professor of law at Temple University. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, talking about the fight over government documents found at Mar-a-Lago. And again, Craig Green, our guest, professor of law at Temple University. He's a former Justice Department lawyer who worked for the George W. Bush administration. He also clerked for Merrick Garland, the current attorney general. Let me toss a couple of more questions to you, and then we've got some comments and questions from our listeners. There was some question about these empty documents that had labels on them, but you opened the folders and there was nothing there. What should we make of that?
Yeah, I think that's a good example of something that's very hard to know without more details that are all supposed to be and currently hidden from public view. We are told from other people who'd work with the president that he would sometimes read documents from a folder and then hand them off to one of his aides, who would then properly handle the documents. So he would be left with an empty folder. And there are more malevolent possibilities, but I think at least those things are potentially innocent.
And this whole issue of executive privilege, I understand attorney-client privilege, I think. I mean, enough, I think, for our conversation. But this case really seems to hang on this whole notion of executive privilege, what it is, who has it. Does a former president have any sort of access to executive privilege? Help us understand that.
Yeah, I think so. And let me just say on attorney-client privilege, if you imagine the FBI, DOJ storming Rudy Giuliani's office, there might be a number of documents there that concern any of his clients, including Trump, and that might have a lot of attorney-client privilege issues. There's not any real suggestion that that's true of these Mar-a-Lago documents. The 11,000 documents, one could speculate, I think there aren't very many attorney-client privilege. Much more on target is a claim by the former president of executive privilege. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that our current president totally has. But, for example, Richard Nixon, when he left office, he believed that basically everything he had done, all the tapes and all that sort of stuff, were all his. And Congress disagreed, and they passed a statute, which people hear about in the news, called the Presidential Records Act, which specified that a lot of documents that presidents produce in the course of their presidency are not their property. They're the public property. And that's the document I've referenced, the statute I've referenced a couple of times. It set up a whole process for former presidents to come in and say, no, no, that's personal. They come in and say, no, no, that was an employment decision. No, no, there are various reasons I can't release that information. There's a whole statutory process, a whole bureaucratic process, a whole bunch of agency officials who deal with all those things and have done for almost 50 years. For almost 50 years, every single former president that's ever had any concern about any document ever, which is nothing on the scale of today, but all of those things are handled as Congress specified in the Presidential Records Act, as the U.S. Supreme Court upheld as constitutionally sufficient to satisfy the constitutional prerogatives of a former president. I'm a former president under the Constitution, whatever. The Supreme Court said this statute's good enough. It satisfies those needs. It satisfies all the needs of having an effective presidency. Do that. Tricky Dick. And I think that's the thing that presidents from that time to this have always adhered to. And I think this Trump set of arguments about executive privilege are really challenging that premise and inviting the possibility, no, those are my documents to do however I want. Not that I'm going to release them to the press or put them in the New York Times. I'm not even going to let them go to the Department of Justice inside the executive branch because I just want to keep them at Mar-a-Lago forever. This is absurd. This is a real challenge to a vital fundamental principle of how presidents work in this country.
And just to make sure, because this is so important, so for a former president, there is a process to ask for specific documents or appeal that they are able to retain documents, but not the sort of broad executive privilege.
The executive privilege claims are resolved through a bureaucratic process and not through a special master. Let me just say on that point, Judge Cannon didn't say anything about how much executive privilege a former president should have. She's sending the special master, whoever it is, out to decide with no legal guidance whatsoever. The best guidance I would have given anyone is this 1977, 7-2 Supreme Court opinion. There's actually also a terrific D.C. Circuit opinion written by Judge Millett just a couple of years ago that analyzes this in detail and depth. There's nothing like that in Florida. You know, they're all those really important constitutional issues that involve long-established presidential practice, very important constitutional values. There's nothing. And this whole idea is just setting people loose into a real morass of unguided, unprecedented behavior. I think it's a terrible circumstance.
Paul has an interesting question. He says, how can one claim executive privilege to information and documents that one can't legally possess?
Yeah, and that was exactly the issue in the 77 case, the Supreme Court case, where they were trying to be generous, or you could think of it that way. They say, well, a former president might have some real values in the decisions that he makes or this kind of a thing, but they said this Presidential Record Act passed by statute is adequate. It sufficiently serves all that. So they said, former President Nixon, you have to go through the Presidential Records Act. A perfectly serviceable answer here would be, former President Trump, you, like everybody else who's a former president, have to go through the Presidential Records Act process, and not this stuff.
Well, isn't that the argument then? And Barr said that the government lawyers should appeal this. Would that be the argument that they would make, saying that we have a system to deal with this?
Yeah, one of the biggest arguments, for sure. They're different categories of the case, but the executive privilege category of the case is really the most upside down of the whole set. It's really the most backward thinking. The idea you have executive privilege against the executive branch as a former president is kind of the most illogical part of the whole thing.
Let me read a couple of more comments. One from Patricia. She says this special master demand by Trump's lawyers is a blatant stalling tactic, and there will be more. I'm tired of and frightened by the way his inner circle have been weaponizing and abusing our courts. Do you see it that way? Do you share her concern?
I mean, it depends what happens on Friday, but I share the concerns. And I think that the judge's opinion, although I think a very educated and credentialed and a talented person, I think that this opinion does not show well. And I think that one has to hope if she is able to hold the special master proceeding, very narrow, very short time frame, then much like Bill Barr said, maybe this is just a rain-delayed inning. And every baseball fan suffered those. So, but I think if this becomes sort of weeks or months, you know, you think about, again, a criminal investigation happening behind the scenes, out of the public arena. There's no way for you or me or anyone to calculate exactly how much that will damage the investigation. Are other people destroying documents today? Are other people fleeing the country today? Are other people deleting cell phones today? No one knows. But the Department of Justice, in every case, thousands of cases a year, they do search warrants and they do investigations, and eventually someday they file indictments or they do not. And any sort of abuses or whatever excess is worked out in a suppression motion after the indictment is filed, not some special master in advance that hamstrings the investigation that's going forward that nobody's supposed to know about and nobody's supposed to be hypermanaging from the press. And so that's what I think is so weird and unfortunate about this particular scenario.
I think we've touched on this, but I just wanted to pause for a moment. This is the Washington Post report this morning that they found at least a document. There might be more describing, and again, quoting from the Washington Post, a foreign government's military defense, including its nuclear capabilities. Now, this is apparently a document stored at Mar-a-Lago, which is a club. We have learned that documents were moved. They weren't necessarily safe, that some of Trump's team misrepresented what they were doing. I mean, maybe lie is the correct word. But nonetheless, I would assume the intelligence community is very concerned about that. And whatever country this is, and there are only, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 that have nuclear weapons, that there's a lot of concern overseas.
Yeah, and this is another thing that we fundamentally are not supposed to know about, you know, right. And that's the reason the national security, there's a legitimate question of national security. The most important thing that's happened with the search is they got the documents back. Whatever it is that happens with Trump or whatever else, at least the government has those documents back, documents that Trump and his team had not surrendered in response to a subpoena asking for those documents. And so including there are allegations, there have been in the past, about various nuclear level things dealing with human intelligence, things dealing with material intelligence. You know, there are there's evidence to show that there is very, very sensitive material at Mar-a-Lago. And thank goodness we can all sleep better thinking there's not today.
Mm. I don't think we know the answer to this because it hangs over this, which is why former President Trump took what he took and why he refuses to give it back.
Yeah, I think there's no, from the evidence available, there's no legitimate reason for him to have any fragment of the classified, marked classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. You know, I think that's the greatest thing to say. I think you've heard many people say it, including Bill Barr. There's no legitimate reason for a former president nearly 2 years after the fact to have anything that might be in these sort of sensitive national security documents. That's what he was told in the subpoena, by the way, was you've got some documents we hear, fork them over. And he did not fork them. He kept them to himself. Mm. And that's sort of, again, that's the precipitating events that caused this whole search in the first place, was perfectly legitimate, lawyer to lawyer, here's a subpoena, turn over the documents, and they just plain did not do it. And that's also, as you were referring, that's the reason they have all these other documents that and other materials that are not responsive to the national security concerns, because they show how casually these that's the claim, they show how casually these documents were thrown in with photographs or scarves or whatever it might be, you know, all kinds of things that, again, the DOJ and the FBI know, we do not know, but that's the reason, in addition to FBI's on the spot shouldn't be making decisions what's in and out. But, you know, but there's really reason to think this is woefully mishandled, and there's no legit, that's the thing, if you have, on the one hand, every reason to have the government get the information back, and no legitimate reason for Trump to have had them in his private residence. Mm. There's just no good reason for a president to have those things, as best anyone can tell.
Hopefully we'll get the answer to that particular question. Let me ask you about what's been described as an unwritten rule applying to the Department of Justice, that they generally avoid doing something that could interfere with a voter's decision by not, quote-unquote, prohibiting any official action, quote, for the purpose of affecting any election. The idea is that 60 days before an election, I don't know whether you halt an investigation or it goes underground, but nonetheless, what should we make of this? And should it be Trump is not on the ballot this year, should this be applied to this particular case?
Yeah, the value at stake is the integrity of the law, and the DOJ has had some kind of idea that you more or less shouldn't be charging people right before an election. Let the people decide. Let the criminal investigation proceed some other way. It's not a rule. It's not without exceptions, various things. Trump isn't on the ballot. There are a variety of reasons that might not apply here. The one reason it might not apply here is because any delay to pushing us closer and closer to the election has a name, and it's Judge Cannon. Like, it's Judge Cannon who has put the DOJ in a position where things might get slowed down or what have you. But nevertheless, if you look at the pattern of behavior, Attorney General Garland, from the minute of his nomination until this day, has really tried to stick to the straight and narrow and play by the book and try to raise the DOJ above and beyond sort of political attacks. He has abjectly failed at that. The DOJ is getting attacked all the time. But I think Judge Cannon's opinion is part of that process on the other side. You know, she and her opinion are the ones who are talking about politics. She and her opinion are talking about how you have to handle a former president with kid gloves while not addressing the serious possibility of misconduct on the other side. And so I think this whole idea of legitimacy, it's not a sort of both sides situation. The DOJ probably, including, are they likely to indict Trump in the next, before the midterm? They're not likely to do that. If there's any way to avoid doing it, I'm pretty sure they will avoid doing it. But still, like, in terms of thinking about it, that rule speaks to the DOJ's commitment to try to keep criminal law enforcement out of the winds of public partisanship. And that's where I think, not to their failing, but I think they really haven't succeeded at that.
Well, and not to suggest that they do what Comey did, but I think it's pretty clear that he violated that 60-day rule.
Well, I mean, he didn't charge.
He did not charge.
Yeah, but he did. I think there are a lot, for people who can remember the Comey situation well, like, there's a lot of stuff in that episode is what I would say. And I think Judge Gar, I mean, of course, the FBI director, not the attorney general. There's a lot of things to say there. But I think the main thing to say is that for that reason and a million others, Attorney General Garland took office with a goal of raising up the DOJ and its best reputations as an impartial, no one is above the law kind of institution. And the available evidence of this proceeding suggests that he has followed that every chapter and verse in T's and Q's and I's. And so he really has done that. And nevertheless, this district judge has, in response to the Trump lawyer's arguments, has invented new procedures, has departed from established precedent, has stirred the water with a bunch of mud. And I think the best thing that we can hope for is that on Friday, maybe at least she'll keep it short. If she can just keep it short and just make all this go away in a week or 2 weeks, then maybe we have to hope for an investigation. We don't know. We have to hope that a week or two won't damage things too much, because that's the best we can hope for.
Here's an email from Ank, who says, my understanding of oversight and accountability for U.S. courts relies on self-enforcement of legal and ethical rules. My concern is inadequate oversight for Judge Cannon.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is another thing. Like, she definitely was appointed by Trump in the last days of his presidency, you know, but nevertheless, it can't be that every judge has to disqualify themselves from their appointing person. And just to think the appeal through a little bit, you know, the 11th Circuit is where this appeal would go, where 7 of the 11 judges are very conservative and 6 are Trump appointees. So even if you appeal the 11th Circuit, there are Trump judges all around. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of the reality of things. And if you have criminal litigation that involves a former president, which is not commonplace, it's really, really rare. But in that sort of circumstance, you have to find judges who can put aside their own partisanship or their own political I don't think it's a matter of partisanship with Judge Cannon. I think she just is in a world where, like, former President Trump feels like a victim a lot. And I think that she, for those reasons, in a certain aspect of the American culture, that's what people think. And so that's why she emphasizes all those themes in her opinion, because that's the way it seems to her. But I don't think it's a matter of recusal. I think it's a matter of the best judicial traditions point a different direction, and this is not a great example.
Almost out of time here, but I'm thinking that one of the legacies of former President Trump is our judicial system, our legal system, in terms of the numbers of judges and justices that he got appointed to the bench.
Correct. And let me just say, in fairness to Judge Cannon, you know, people won't remember, but there was a Supreme Court opinion a couple of years ago about former presidential privilege within congressional investigation. And Justice Kavanaugh, another Trump appointee, wrote a specific opinion basically raising themes to dissent from the 1977 case I've been talking about, really suggesting a complete unsettling of executive privilege. So there is a lot of really radical judicial thought out there that everything should change, but it shouldn't change from a district court in Florida. The district court from Florida really should have followed established processes and precedents and kept us all out of the news.
Well, Craig Green, thank you, as always, for coming in and talking to us on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Professor of Law at Temple University, a former Justice Department lawyer. He worked in the George W. Bush administration, also clerked for Merrick Garland. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times and the programs. You can also and always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.